They are indeed exceptional and temporary.
Under EU law, a threat to public order or security allows a government to check and restrict who comes into its territory for up to 6 months. Officials acknowledge that for these blockades to be taken down, the influx of migrants and refugees, that's now more than 2,000 people per day, must be drastically reduced. For NPR News, I'm Terry Schultz in Brussels.
North Korea is threatening nuclear retaliation. NPR's Elise Hu reports on what led to Pyongyang's latest warning.
This threat of military retaliation comes after the United Nations voted for sanctions meant to cripple the North's nuclear program. Pyongyang state media reports that Kim Jong-un said the U.S. is pressuring other countries to, quote, start war and catastrophe. The U.S. responded by saying it's urging North Korea to refrain from provocative actions.
NPR's Elise Hu reporting. You're listening to NPR.
Support for NPR comes from Heather and Paul Haga, supporting Salzburg Global Seminar, committed to helping tomorrow's leaders forge solutions today. More information is available online at salzburgglobal.org. And from the National Endowment for the Arts, Art Works.
My name is Siobhan Cherry, and I listen to WIPR. I'm such a, I don't want to say generalist, but I love aspects of a lot of things. So it's not just one show that really stands out for me. It's like a collective. It's a place to get all of my culture, my lifestyle, my design, my art, my politics. It's everything all in one place, so it's really nice.
Sating your interest in all kinds of topics, this is Your Public Radio. Stay tuned.
And do your part to support Your Public Radio by giving us a call and making a pledge. 410-235-1395 is the number to call. That's 410-235-1395. You can also pledge your support for Midday with Sheila Cast online at WYPR.org. You know what to expect when you listen to WYPR. All sorts of things. In-depth reporting, engaging conversations, insightful analysis. Oftentimes you'll get all of those things within just a quarter hour. It's the kind of radio that's only available because listeners support it. And during this winter pledge drive, we're asking you to become one of those supporting listeners, a WYPR member. $5 a month, $10 a month, you decide what you want to contribute, and whatever it is, we will make good use of that contribution so that whenever you decide to listen, you'll be able to learn something more about your world. It's easy to pledge through our mobile-friendly website, WYPR.org. Just click the donate link and we will, of course, take your calls, 410-235-1395. Programming today is made possible by Shriver Hall Concert Series, presenting American soprano Nicole Cabell this Sunday, March 6th at 5:30 p.m. Cabell performs works by Dvorak, Ravel, Obrador, Ricky Ian Gordon, and a selection of spirituals. Tickets are available at shriverconcerts.org. Support comes from the Hamden Village Merchants Association. Hamden is home to numerous shops, eateries, and services, and is celebrating First Fridays tonight with participating merchants like Luigi's Italian Deli and NV Salon Collective. For event listings, hamdenmerchants.com. And support comes from Hood College's Graduate School with programs in clinical mental counseling, school counseling, thanatology, and human sciences designed for recent graduates, career enhancement, and lifelong learning. There's an open house on the 6th of April. You can learn more at hood.edu/go-further. Your contributions to WYPR ensure that you can go further with the learning that you get from this station. Your contributions make everything you hear possible, including Midday with Sheila Cast, which gets underway now.
Welcome to Midday, everybody. I'm Sheila Cast. Thanks so much for tuning in. Imagine a medical school and law school, schools of nursing and engineering, a member of the Big Ten Conference, a university whose resources would span from College Park to Baltimore. This is the future envisioned by Senate Bill 1052, the University of Maryland Strategic Partnership Act of 2016. The legislation doesn't use the word merger between the University of Maryland College Park and the University of Maryland Baltimore, but that's what some opponents of the legislation fear. This hour, we're going to look at this proposal. It's been up for serious consideration before. We'll also look at what a tighter alliance could mean for Baltimore and Maryland's economy, job market, and ability to attract businesses and researchers. A few key provisions of the proposal. The bill states that the professional schools that comprise UMB may not be relocated out of Baltimore City, although professional school courses may be offered at locations other than the city. The bill would create two centers, the Center for Maryland Advanced Ventures, which must be located in Baltimore and would focus on attracting grants and commercialization, and the University of Maryland Center for Economic and Entrepreneurship Development to be located in College Park and charged with developing programs in virtual reality, neurosciences, data analytics, and cybersecurity. The bill would move the headquarters of the University System of Maryland to Baltimore. Now, the headquarters are just north of the College Park campus in Prince George's County. And finally, the bill states, quote, "When the president of either campus vacates that position, the Board of Regents of the University System of Maryland has the power to appoint a new president or to determine that one person should be appointed as president of both campuses." A lot to think about. I'm joined this hour by Barry Raskovar, political commentator and blogger for PoliticalMaryland.com. Welcome back, Barry.
Always a pleasure.
And also here is James Brady, a member of the University System of Maryland's Board of Regents, appointed by Governor Hogan last year. James Brady is former director of T. Rowe Price Group, Constellation Energy Group, and McCormick. In the 90s, he was Governor Glendening's Secretary of Business and Economic Development. Welcome to the show.
Thank you, Sheila.
Glad you're here. Barry, what's behind this push to join the two schools more tightly?
A number of things. One is Senate President Mike Miller, who is a huge College Park booster, has for a long time wanted to have a law school and a school of medicine affiliated with College Park. A number of decades ago, chairman of the Board of Regents, the late Peter O'Malley, attempted to move the law school from Baltimore to College Park, and it failed because of the uproar that it created. But Mike Miller definitely wants to see the prestige of his alma mater, which is University of Maryland College Park, raised dramatically. And putting together the professional schools on the Baltimore campus with the College Park campus would make the combination a heavy hitter in the national rankings of colleges. The amount of research grants that the two institutions combined have is roughly $1 billion and puts it ahead of MIT and Stanford. So, you know, suddenly the University of Maryland would be ranked in the top 10 nationally. That's what the Senate president wants. It's also what the current College Park president, Wallace Lowe, would love to have. However, there's opposition to that thought in Baltimore.
I don't know, is it fair, Jim Brady, to say you're some of that opposition?
Absolutely fair.
Okay. And what is your opposition?
And let me be clear on one point, Sheila. You don't have to be a rocket scientist to read that legislation to come to the conclusion that this is all about a merger between College Park and UMB. The bill might be entitled Strategic Partnerships, but this is about the merger. And if you listen to Wallace Lowe's testimony on Tuesday before Senate Budget and Tax, it was very clear that was the intention. The goal here is to merge the two campuses and to have the president of College Park be the CEO of the combined entity. That's what the goal is. So the debate is, what are the issues that are connected with that? And let me tell you the two that are foremost in my mind. Number one, UMB is an anchor institution in Baltimore, and Baltimore has very few. It is a city with daunting challenges. UMB has done an extraordinary job in West Baltimore. The programs that Jay Perman has put in place are—
The president of UMB.
The president of UMB. Just phenomenal programs. To not have a president of UMB, someone with the authority to make those decisions, all of that stuff doesn't happen. That's the way the world works. You need to have the authority to get things done. He has done that, and it has been incredibly successful. So at a time when Baltimore is suffering in a variety of ways, to do anything that diminishes one of its anchor institutions is a problem in my mind. Second issue relates to the system as a whole. The fact of the matter is that there are 11 institutions in the university system of Maryland. If this merger were to go through, we would not only have a flagship, we would have a mega flagship.
It would be a very big institution. There's 37,000 students in College Park and about, what, 7,000? 6,500 or something at the University of...
I think it's 9,000.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Those are good factoids. Let me give you another factoid. 70% of the students in the university system of Maryland do not go to College Park or UMB. And those are students that we have to deal with. Now, why is that an issue with all of this? The bill is relatively silent with respect to those institutions. Maryland has a finite resources to support higher education and everything else. If you look at this bill, there are mandated costs connected with it in order to make this combination work. Where is that money going to come from? Is it not going to come out of the blue? How is that going to impact these nine other institutions that play a hugely important role in the state? The bill is silent on that, and I think until there is a clear sense of direction with respect to that, I think this bill is a huge problem.
What, Barry, what's your reaction to those?
Well, I think that what we haven't discussed yet are the benefits that could flow out of this. And you've seen this back in 2011. President Miller tried initially to bring about this merger.
Right. This is at least the second time in 5 years that Mike Miller has pushed for this.
Yes. Now, what came out of that was not a merger, but was a strategic alliance, they called it. And the two campus presidents were instructed to work together and to come up with some joint partnerships. Well, this led to something called M-Power, which is...
Spelled capital M, capital P-O-W-E-R.
Yes, and it's basically an umbrella group so that joint research projects and other types of partnerships could be formed and worked on. So what this has led to is a whole stream of joint professorships, which they didn't have before. You went from four joint research project proposals to 116. You went from $3 million in joint research project funding to $26 million in just 3 years. And I think a lot of the opposition to working more closely together from the faculty, those walls have started to come down. And this is something that is true in all of higher education. Most of the education and research takes place in silos, the Department of Chemistry, the Department of Physics, the Department of Medicine, the Department of Pharmacy. Well, this bill is intended to bring down the silos and to get these people together, to get the best and brightest chemistry faculty members down at College Park working with the School of Pharmacy in Maryland to come up with some innovations, discoveries that can be commercialized, that can be turned into commercial ventures that lead to jobs, that could lead to some pretty big companies formed right here, maybe at the Biopark at the University of Maryland, Baltimore, or in Baltimore City. It's interesting, Sheila, that in addition to Senate President Mike Miller, Senator Bill Ferguson, a freshman senator from Baltimore Inner Harbor area, is one of the key advocates here. And what he sees is that Baltimore is a struggling city at the moment. It needs jobs. It needs to align itself more with the new knowledge economy that is forming. And what he would like to have happen is the brain power of College Park focusing not so much on the Washington, D.C. area, but to turn its focus to Baltimore. And this bill has a lot of items in there designed to make it much more appealing for these types of research projects leading to commercialization to take place in Baltimore.
But Barry Escobar, I hear you talk about the benefits that have sprung from this MPower strategic partnership. And I think, well, doesn't that prove that that kind of partnership is working pretty well? Why do you have to make, I'm not quite sure what the tighter links would be, but why do we need more? Why can't we just continue to push the alliance that was set up
four years ago? I think this bill, to a large extent, is just taking the current alliance and turning it into a strategic partnership. It would just make it bigger. This bill is far from perfect. It's got a lot of holes that have to be filled. There are huge governance questions. There are huge questions, as Jim Brady mentioned, as far as how you deal with the other components of the University System of Maryland, especially UMBC, which has a fast-growing research component. What they've seen over the last 3 or 4 years in collaborations has been so successful that a lot of the legislators in Annapolis are saying, why don't we go a lot faster and a lot further in this direction?
Jim Brady, what do you say to that?
Sheila, you asked exactly the right question. I mean, MPower has been tremendously successful, and my plan would be to enhance that, to work together to make MPower even more successful than it is today. And that does not necessarily include merging these two campuses. It just doesn't. You know, MPower is one of the great success stories in Maryland in recent times. Let's take that to the next level. We do not have to totally turn the system over in order to do that. And it's very clear to me that this merger changes the landscape of the University System of Maryland in a hugely important way, a very complicated way, to me, with a lot of negative implications to it.
Hold that thought. We need to take a short break. We're going to continue after this break talking to Jim Brady, who serves on the University System of Maryland's Board of Regents, and with Barry Rascovar, who blogs at politicalmaryland.com. And we'll take your calls. But right now, we want to check in with Nathan Sterner about WIPR's fundraising drive and how you can help. Welcome back to Midday, everybody. I'm Sheila Cast. We're talking about the proposal to create a University of Maryland with a College Park campus and a Baltimore campus. I'm here with James Brady, who serves on the University System of Maryland's Board of Regents, and Barry Rascovar, who blogs at politicalmaryland.com. Did you attend the University of Maryland College Park or the University of Maryland Baltimore? What do you think about putting the law school and medical schools under the umbrella of the flagship school? Join our conversation. Call us at 410-662-8780 or send an email to midday@wypr.org. Ken Ullman has joined us. He, the former Howard County executive, is now Chief Strategy Officer for Economic Development at the University of Maryland College Park Foundation. Welcome to Midday.
Thank you very much for having me, and thanks for hosting this conversation.
And what is your argument? I gather you are in favor of this legislation.
Well, certainly, I had the opportunity to serve as county executive in Howard County, which is a unique perspective right in the middle of the two great campuses that we're talking about. I was a student, got my undergraduate degree at University of Maryland College Park, and met my wife here, and I'm thrilled that Dr. Lowe asked me to come help create the great university town in College Park, where we're sort of driving economic development, both helping startups that are growing out of the university stay and grow and thrive in College Park in Maryland, and luring other folks. And, you know, I think my perspective is that this is a really exciting time to be in the state of Maryland. It's an exciting time for economic development. And, you know, both campuses at the University of Maryland in Baltimore and the University of Maryland College Park are, I think, living up to their the role that has been asked of them by the Board of Regents and the legislature to really be a catalyst for the economy of our state. And I think you see exciting things in Baltimore, whether it be in Port Covington, in the areas around the waterfront, whether it be in the Biopark along Martin Luther King Boulevard and the University of Maryland Baltimore campus, and certainly with what we're doing with our Innovation District and Research Park in College Park. And I think, you know, from a lot of folks outside, I think they don't understand why we're the only state in the country where the flagship and the graduate schools, especially the medical school, are not combined in some more significant way. And so, you know, I from my perspective, I want us to be linked in a stronger way. Empower started that process and has been an excellent driver of collaboration. And I think we ought to make that an even stronger combination. I'll leave the sort of details of how to do that up to the legislature and the Board of Regents, but certainly connecting the two campuses in a much stronger way, I think, is a good thing for the state of Maryland.
Well, I'm here with Barry Raskovar and with Jim Brady, who makes some pretty cogent arguments against it, in particular that losing, which this legislation envisions eventually having one president of both campuses, could really cost Baltimore the drive, the ability to respond quickly to conditions in Baltimore.
Well, I think that's just one aspect of the bill. I mean, if you read the bill does a number of really important things for Baltimore. It moves the system office. The chancellor of the system will go to work every day in Baltimore City with the 80 jobs that are currently located in College Park. And so, you know, frankly, from a Baltimore perspective, I can say there's a number of folks down in Prince George's County and College Park that are not too happy about that shift. But
Let me get Jim Brady's reaction to that. What about that, having the center of gravity of the system being located in Baltimore?
It's fine. But the idea that this is a game changer is silly, in my opinion. It would be like the NFL coming to Baltimore tomorrow and saying, you know, we're going to take the Ravens out of Baltimore, but we're going to move the NFL offices to downtown Baltimore. The difference.
I wish our listeners could see your expression as you pose that.
The difference between UMB not being an anchor institution with a sitting president making all of the important calls that have to be made in the interests of the community that it serves is wildly different than having an administrative office in downtown Baltimore. Hey, it's fine. I'm delighted that they're going to move the USM offices to Baltimore. But the idea that this is a big deal, I think, is vastly overstated.
Kennelman.
Well, I think there are a number of things in the bill, and I don't believe I use the term game changer, but certainly one can't deny the benefits to Baltimore that are in this bill, such as the system office moving to Baltimore with its 80 jobs, such as in the language of the bill, it's stating that the graduate schools that are currently in Baltimore cannot be relocated out of Baltimore. They must stay in Baltimore, which I think everyone believes, certainly me, that that's incredibly important. There is additional funding for startup companies in Baltimore City that are coming out of commercialized technology at the University of Maryland, Baltimore. There's a venture capital center established in Baltimore as well. So I think there are a number of really positive things for Baltimore City. And clearly the Board of Regents has the option today or the option under this bill to create one president if they elect in the future. Doesn't say it has to be done if you read the language of the bill. So look, from my perspective, I think a stronger connection between the flagship campus and the flagship city of our state is really important. And I know others have talked about the fact that rankings are not important, but the fact is we have created a self-imposed ceiling on the way we are recognized from the outside world. And I do believe that is important. And I said in my testimony the other day that when I was just at the University of Minnesota working with their economic development folks, looking at how they work together with the private sector, with their relationships with major companies like Medtronic, the first thing they give you is the top 20 research universities in the country, with a big pullout of Minnesota being the number 8 in the country when it comes to research dollars, and the word Maryland does not show up on that list. Yet if we were combined into a powerhouse, we would be in the top 5 or 6 research university powerhouses in the country. And so I have to believe that we can figure out a way to tell our story in a more effective way, because we truly are a great engine for the state of Maryland. And, you know, I'd love to see us be able to tell that story in a more effective way.
Ken, the University of Maryland, College Park, and UMB are incredibly highly respected institutions around the country. Let there be no question about that. And, you know, the idea and the fiction that we are an outlier, that we are the only university system in the country that doesn't combine its professional schools with its flagship, is just not true. It is not true.
With all due respect, it is, sir. I mean, when you look at our rankings, there are schools that have no business being in front of us that show up in front of us when it comes to National Science Foundation numbers or philanthropy numbers.
Someone explain to me how the rankings, what kind of clout the rankings have. I mean, what kinds of decisions get made based on the rankings that you're talking about? Are there really grants that don't, research grants, for example, that Maryland doesn't have a chance at because it's lower down, because College Park and Baltimore show up as separate entities lower down in size?
Look, I think we've done a great job of going after research dollars. And if you look at the University of Maryland Baltimore and the University of Maryland College Park, combined we're an over $1 billion enterprise. So we've clearly done a great job. And I don't want to oversell the sort of limitation that we've placed on ourselves. It, you know, in a perfect world, we would show up in the rankings higher. I will tell you that when I pitch the state of Maryland and the university system to the private sector folks, whether it be in Silicon Valley and other places, when I tell them that together we are over $1 billion, their eyes do light up. So I do think it would be helpful. I'm not trying to oversell the point that you would do this specifically just for the rankings, but I do get very frustrated as a proud Marylander when I look at rankings that show places like Rutgers and others in front of us when truly we are a much higher ranked university system with both of our campuses together.
Ken Ullman, I know we have to let you go. I appreciate your giving us your thoughts on this. Thanks.
Thank you.
Ken Ullman is Chief Strategy Officer for Economic Development for the University of Maryland College Park Foundation. He's former Howard County Executive. This is Midday on WYPR. I'm here with Barry Raskovar, whom I haven't given much chance to say anything recently, but columnist Barry Raskovar, and Jim Brady, a regent on the University System Maryland Board of Regents. Barry, is there something you want to comment here?
Yeah, I think you have to look back at history between the rivalry between the Washington suburbs of Maryland and Baltimore City. And, you know, for a long time, Baltimore City was very dominant politically and from an economic development standpoint, too. Well, that has turned around. And Baltimore City is now in a situation where, quite frankly, it needs all the help it can get in Annapolis. It no longer has the votes that it once did, but Prince George's, Montgomery counties do. There's a lot of talk about the Washington-Baltimore megalopolis as the two metropolitan regions start to creep closer and closer together to become one. The new town of Columbia is, you know, midway between these two regions, and it's seen as, well, you know, it is becoming a megalopolis. Well, in truth, it hasn't happened yet, and at this point in its history, Baltimore City needs help from wherever it can get it, and you know, anything that can be done to draw the Washington suburbs and the economic development clout and brain power it has, to Baltimore, which needs new industries, new jobs, and new energy too. Baltimore should take advantage of it. And this bill is aimed pretty much at trying to take a giant step forward in that direction.
Interesting. We have to take another break, and when we come back, I want to get your thoughts, Jim Brady, about whether this is a sign of strength or weakness for the city of Baltimore. But as I said, we do want to take a break here because WIPR is in the second day of its fund drive, and Nathan Sterner is standing by to tell us how we can help. Welcome back to Midday. I'm Sheila Cast. We're talking about the renewed push to combine the University of Maryland College Park with the University of Maryland Baltimore. I'm speaking with James Brady, a member of the University System of Maryland Board of Regents, and Barry Raskovar of the blog Political Maryland. What do you make of this legislation? Does a combined school make sense to you? Join our conversation. Call us at 410-662-8780 or send us an email at midday@wypr.org. Nicholas has called us from Bowie. Nicholas, welcome to Midday.
Thank you for taking my call, Sheila. I really appreciate your show. But I think this legislation sets a series of dangerous precedents, looking at it from the perspective of the USM. The USM, which has been found guilty of segregation and differential treatment of the HBCUs and teaching at Bowie State, I can say this sets dangerous precedent because it's effectively turning UMB into a regional campus of College Park. If that happens, how long before Bowie State gets absorbed into College Park? How long before UMES gets absorbed into Salisbury? It sets dangerous precedent. Not only that, but the funding, the funding differential, the teaching load differential that already exists between College Park, UMB, and the other schools. Is this going to be another way that College Park is going to be able to siphon off resources at the expense of the other schools that are currently struggling to survive in the USM?
You raise a lot of questions. I look to Barry Raskovar to see whether he has a response.
Well, the governance issue has been batted about for decades and decades and decades, and it seems like every decade there is some new proposal to make it better. Are you going to have more independence on each campus? Are you going to have more centralized control in systems president's office? How are you going to do this? I'm not sure it makes a whole heck of a lot of difference as far as the ability of the faculty to educate students on campuses as to what the governance structure is. So that the faculty will do its job regardless of what the structure of the administration is that is imposed on them. I think that sort of misses the point here. This is not some big bad wolf knocking on the door, but the issue of how are you going to run the Baltimore campus from College Park is a major stumbling block. I think it can be overcome, but it's not going to be easy for somebody down the road to be able to figure out what is best on the Baltimore campus.
If it's overcome by essentially pulling that part out of the legislation so that there would be continued to be a president of the College Park campus and a president of the University of Maryland Baltimore campus, then that would essentially torpedo the argument that there would be this one entity that would rank high as a very big school in research rankings, right?
We don't know how they could structure it to get around that problem. It may be that's in the end result will be part of the compromise. We just don't know. But I think the bigger question is how you put more juice in the Baltimore area from a higher education standpoint, and that's what I think Senator Ferguson was looking to do with this bill.
Jim? Brady.
Sheila, one of the other points Nicholas made that I think is really important gets to the question of allocation of resources amongst all of the constituent universities in the system. That is a very, very important point. As I indicated before, when you create a mega flagship with all kinds of mandated costs connected with that, I find it hard to believe that that will not have some negative impact on the other institutions in the system. And I think that is something we need to avoid. The other nine institutions are critically important. They might not be called flagships, but they educate over 70% of the students in the system. Wow. That, to me, is critically important.
Right. And our caller particularly mentioned some of the historically black
Absolutely.
Colleges that are part of the
well,
system.
Well, I think you also have to go back and look at the fiscal note that was presented on this bill, which shows that the impact is pretty modest. I mean, you're talking about $3 million a year that would go to this ventures startup operation out of Baltimore, and there would be some other costs, but they're not giant. And, you know, I don't think it would have much impact on the historically black institutions. It may be that the court case that is moving forward will force the state and the university system to put even more resources there.
Colin Bird is joining us. Colin Bird is head of government relations for the University of Maryland College Park's chapter of the NAACP. He testified in opposition to the bill. Welcome back to Midday, Colin.
Thanks a lot.
Your point?
Yeah, so, I mean, I wish I had a little more time so I could shred some of the misinformation that was provided by
Well, why did you start? Why don't you start with what you'd most like to correct?
All right, so I just want to highlight the harm that I think this merger would have on other institutions. And I'll piggyback on what the guy from Bowie said about the HBCUs. To give you some background, I don't know, I wasn't at the beginning at all, but I would say in 2012, UMB and UMCP began this research partnership called Empower.
Right. We did cover that background.
Right. Now, Regent Gary Atman, who supports this bill, actually said something really interesting about the proposed merger. He called it Empower on steroids. Now, I know he didn't mean that in a literal sense, but I think it illustrates this point, right? In sports, steroids are bad. And the reason that they're bad is because they give some athletes an unfair advantage. In a way, that's what this merger does. In the unlikely scenario that it actually works, by the way, these things have an 80% failure rate. Regent Brady can tell you that. But it would give these two campuses a very unfair advantage. It would widen the gap between these two campuses and the rest of the state's public colleges. The other colleges already get the short end of the stick. And with this move, their end will only get shorter. And so if you're not at College Park, you should be asking, what's in it for me? And the answer is zero, zilch, nada. UMB becomes the victim of a hostile takeover. UMBC loses research money. Freeman Hrabowski is one of the best college presidents in the nation. And then again, HBCUs yet again get decimated. They're already a lawsuit. So you can imagine that the plaintiff's attorney is probably licking their chops, because this would be another example of essentially state-sponsored systematic racial discrimination.
Okay.
I disagree completely with what he said. This particular bill would do none of those things. It does not shift resources whatsoever. You're talking about, in Baltimore, a set of professional schools for graduate students. Their funding is so different from the funding for a Bowie State or a College Park that, you know, there's just not going to be the impact that he suggests.
Colin, what is, you said there are other things you wanted to address. We have just a couple of minutes left. Pick another one.
Sure. I mean, you know, one of the other things is that a lot of people make these comparisons between what would happen with this merger and what's happening at other Big Ten schools. I would just say that the other Big Ten schools do have professional schools. But again, the difference is distance, right? At Michigan State, for example, it takes 6 minutes to get from the admin building to the medical school, 4 minutes to get to the law school. With the proposed merger, the drive is almost an hour to get to Baltimore. And if you're going by public transportation, it's almost 2.5 hours. Again, we're not talking about an online campus like University of Phoenix or even UMUC. We're talking about two campuses that depend on retail education. And so, you know, the benefits, I think, are overstated.
Colin, I appreciate your sharing your thoughts with us. Colin Bird from the University of Maryland College Park's chapter of the NAACP. Thank you for joining us. Jim Brady, I'll give you the last word because we're almost out of time.
Well, here's my bottom line in all of this. The idea of enhancing the strategic partnerships and research that this bill was purported to push, I totally agree with. And making Empower better than it is now, strengthening it, funding it, I'm all in favor of it. The devil is in the details, as I mentioned before, and the two things that I have not heard any adequate explanation that would give me comfort that this merger would work relate to UMB, and it's not having a president sitting in its office looking out the window at West Baltimore, and the impact that this legislation could have on all of the other institutions in the system. And those institutions are terrific. They cannot be viewed in a second-class way. We do not want to create a situation where we have Snow White and the Nine Dwarfs.
I appreciate your giving us a way to look at this, both of you. Jim Brady, who serves on the University of, System of Maryland Board of Regents, and Barry Raskovar, who blogs at politicalmaryland.com. I also want to thank Joe Squared for providing lunch. Locations and hours at joesquared.com. And thank you for listening. On Monday, a new report by the Center for Enterprise Development looks at personal debt in Baltimore, how it cuts across income levels and puts families at risk. WIPR looks to its listeners to help manage its debt. And we look right now to Nathan Sterner to tell us how.